shit, my brother.
It's time to talk.
You got joyriding birds of Blarney now as well as everything else.
Seriously, some of them I think use a confirmation picture.
I'm happy if that's the case to be part of you getting your vindication and your job back.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM, the voice of Cork.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Hanley Secorp. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. It's Monday, so Monday munchies again today with the Old Mill Confectionery. Beautiful, delicious cakes of all sorts being delivered this lunchtime to the winners by Red Patroller. So more on that in a few minutes' time. Paper-wise this morning, as I say, a prolonged period of blistering sunshine and blue skies is on the cards for this week. Fingers crossed it gets delivered. It's looking good, but the forecasters predicting 25 to 26 degrees. We're looking at five consecutive days of temperatures in and around 23 to 25 degrees. So it's not before time, though. We saw, okay, I know the temperatures in Europe are absolutely insane, don't get me wrong. But anyway, it's something nice to look forward to and to plan for the week. There's a story online in The Independent today, actually, that isn't disconnected or unconnected to sunshine and heat waves. And that is the fact that, and I didn't know this, that sunscreen has a VAT rate on it of 23%. Now, I think that's bizarre, considering that I don't see that as being a luxury item, nor do I see it as being a cosmetic. Well, I suppose it is in kind of a cosmetic, but it prevents, they say, skin cancer. So you would think that, if anything, it certainly shouldn't have a VAT rate of 23%. It's called a non-essential item. So I don't know about that. I think that's one that could be looked at by the European Union, because Pascal Donoghue says that it's impossible to remove it from the VAT rate, or even the... If you think it might... If I'm not saying that it should be a lower VAT rate. I don't think it shouldn't be any VAT rate at all, but the highest one? Anyway, he says it's an EU ruling that they have no control over. I thought that was madness. Other madness now, of course, is the search for the All-Ireland hurling final tickets in full swing. I don't know about you guys, it's already started with me by text. People getting in touch with me by Instagram. They think that I can pull All-Ireland hurling final tickets out of my ears, out of my backside, out of my back pocket. And it ain't so. Can I just go on the record and say, you're barking up the wrong tree if you ever think that I can get you a ticket for Croke Park. But ticket chaos kicks off for the Cork Tip Match. Front page are making this morning's echo. It's great to have these kind of stories. It's great to have this kind of chaos back in our lives again, isn't it? It really and truly is. If you were up there at the weekend for Saturday's match, how'd it go for you? Did you have a great time? Get up and down all right? A bit of chaos, I'm told, here and there, particularly with regards to one or two issues regarding tolls and stuff like that. Do get in touch, though. Everybody get back. I know people got up by train. Did you get back by train? I wouldn't say chaos at Houston, but certainly scrambling for places on trains and stuff. But I suppose it's all part of the buzz, is it? It's all right for me to say. I wasn't caught up in any of it. The very sad story making the papers today of a teenager who killed a man in a hit and run while out on bail. And the fact that he clearly has to be held accountable for this is a front page making the Red Tops. Killed by a speeding car thief while out on bail. And the teenage killer is still free, and he's still robbing motor cars, by all accounts. Michael Farrelly, age 40, his photograph makes the Red Tops today, was hit by the yob who was travelling at 130 kilometres an hour in a stolen vehicle last year. And the Red Tops this morning, including the Sun, Star and Mirror, say, we can reveal the thug is still robbing motors and brazenly posting videos of them online. It's absolutely appalling. Our bail laws need a major overhaul, don't they? And other things can be overhauled, like the domestic violence register, which will be made public. That's a front page of making the Mail today. It's going to be known as Jenny's Law to honour the late Jennifer Poole. She died at the hands of domestic violence. The new register will be published for the public to access once the victim consents to their abusers being named. So that's good news, isn't it? A kind of a portal to view yourself. And I think also, I'm not saying that it would disincline people for, engaging in such violent, unacceptable behaviour, but you wouldn't know. Domestic violence register would be publicly available. And then, of course, the really sad, shocking, tragic news out of Texas. By all accounts, they got a month's rain fell in just hours overnight on Thursday into Friday. And we know that at least 66 people have died, and 11 children are still missing. There was a lot of kids at a particular youth camp, by all accounts. Now, 21 youngsters were amongst the victims. They died. But there's another 11 children that still can't be found. Isn't it absolutely awful? And then a trial that has rolled on for 9 weeks, and the jury were out for 6 days deliberating. And people were probably wondering, wow, if the jury's out that long, there must be some kind of conflab going on as to, you know, guilty or not guilty. It's the story of the Australian woman, Erin Patterson. Now, this doesn't make the papers, but it makes it online. And I saw it on ABC News this morning online. Erin Patterson, guilty of murdering three of her estranged husband's relatives by deliberately serving them poisonous mushrooms for lunch. She faces life in prison. She's going to be sentenced later on this. Like, three of her four lunch guests died in hospital. She served, instead of a big beef Wellington for everybody to eat and share, herself included, she served individual beef Wellingtons instead. And in those beef Wellingtons, there were death cap mushrooms. Now, she denied it. I said, oh, it was a terrible accident. She says, I was foraging for mushrooms. I didn't know that the death cap mushrooms were amongst them. In the end of the day, the jury didn't believe her. She had a strained relationship with her ex-husband. Now, he was invited to the fatal lunch, but he didn't go. And their relationship had deteriorated. Her relationship with her in-laws had also deteriorated. I may well come back to that a little later on, but that story is just breaking overnight. You know, with all of the supposed tariff wars that are going on with regards to Trump and people all over the world, and not knowing what the rate will be for this, that and the other, it's having a huge impact on Irish distilleries. And I don't know the actual number, but I would think that we have more distilleries now in Ireland, you know, and certainly the smaller ones, the micro ones and the not so small that have arrived, and they're doing whiskey and they're doing gin and they're doing vodka and they're doing all sorts of things like that. But apparently they're 90% of the distillery capacity now in Ireland, according to the distillers, is now on hold because they don't know what kind of tariff rate the US is going to impose, whether it's going to be a 10% or a 20%. You don't know with Trump, like, he changes his mind all of the time. But they say Irish distilleries are running dry as Trump's trade war hits the exports. I don't know that they're running dry as such. They're probably stockpiling, or they've stopped distilling and bottling and what have you. And then there's an interesting one, two different interesting stories regarding schools this morning. One is a story from the Irish Times, where parents at a Dublin primary school privately employ a teacher for 60 grand to avoid pupils being educated in supersized classes. And this was the plan, right? They'd put it all together. All of the families had come on board, 600 euro per family. It would cost 60 grand for a year to employ the teacher. But the Archdiocese of Dublin, it obviously is under the Catholic ethos, turned it down and refused the idea. 60 grand that the parents came up with to employ the extra teacher so they could keep some kind of control on class sizes. And then Neil Michael in the Examiner this morning has a story out in Cape Clear where they're appealing for a principal, not just a principal to keep the school open, but more pupils, please, to go out onto the island to actually use the school out there. They're even offering perks. The Examiner this morning says that in return, Ilan Clara's chiefs are offering, among other incentives, affordable long-term rental accommodation. The last time the school board had to appeal for a principal was in 2018. Like, the school's been going for 129 years out there on Cape Clear. And they want to keep it going, but there's a lack of students and they need a school principal. So these are the interesting times that we live in. If you, you know, buy a new car, wherever you buy it, whatever dealer you get it from, and you sign up to all sorts of different warranties, many of the warranties come included in the price and what have you, you may have noticed in the past that perhaps the dealer has told you your warranty is void if you don't get your servicing or repairs done by an authorised dealership, ideally us. Well, apparently the Irish motor industry has been told by the competition watchdog that they must stop that. Apparently the CCPC were getting reports from motorists who said they'd been prevented from having their vehicles serviced or repaired at independent garages. Now, that's all wrong on a load of different levels, you know. You know, there are many, many mechanics out there who are well capable of doing it, regardless of, you know, where they're located, rather than having to go back to the garage or the dealership that you bought it from. I'm a little bit vaguer, though, and I'd love to hear from mechanics or you guys on this one, with regards to the parts. As part of the story then talks about your warranty will be void if you use non-original or non-manufacturer supplied spare parts. And, you know, these would be ones that might be just as good, but they come from another manufacturer. Do you know what I'm saying in that regard? So from technology then to a form of, it's not necessarily AI related, but at a time when more AI, of course, is amongst us, and you've seen more and more self-service checkouts, I found it quite interesting that the Irish Daily Mail this morning are reporting that Tesco is taking on 400 new staff. So 400 new jobs in stores. They're investing 40 million in a major boost in the Irish market, Tesco. And I think that's incredible. I think that's brilliant because you would, and they're going to open another 193 stores. You know, the Tesco Expresses, they're very, very popular. So that's all in spite of, you know, self-service checkouts. You would have thought that less and less would be employed in supermarkets going forward. And I know that over the weekend, Joe Duffy had to come out on X Twitter and say, I am not seeking a nomination for the presidency of Ireland. The papers this morning are saying with Joe Duffy out of the running now, I don't think some of the polls of the weekend were saying that, you know, he wasn't ahead of, you know, potentially, hypothetically ahead of Mairead McGuinness, but she's leading the charge now, by all accounts, for the next president of Ireland. They're all running around like headless chickens on this one. I mean, she's just ahead of Michelle O'Neill from Sinn Féin at 14%. And then Bertie Ahern comes in at 10%, and Conor McGregor after that at 5%. So that's where you're at, really, with the runners and riders. But she's way ahead at this stage at 27% support. And the papers this morning then also talk about, believe it or believe it not, on the 13th of this month, which is just under a week away, it's the 40th anniversary of Live Aid. And the BBC at the moment are running, I haven't seen any of the episodes yet, but they dropped two of them last night. They're running, you know, I don't know how many there are, but it's a documentary on Live Aid. Much of it, footage perhaps that we've never seen before. I can't actually say because I haven't seen it, but you go back to Bob Geldof and Midgeor, Live Aid, 1.9 billion people watching it on television, 132 million euro for famine-stricken people in Ethiopia. It's I've spoken to both Bob Geldof on the air about this. I've spoken to Midgeor on the air about this in the past. And I don't think anybody expected it to be as big as it ever was on both sides of the Atlantic. But, you know, what always amazed me was the amount of artists and bands that really didn't want to play. And Geldof was the master genius on this. He would tell one band that another band was playing. Right. And he'd say, this guy's on board and she's on board. And then they'd feel, oh my God, if they're in, I got to get in. And I know that certainly happened with Freddie Mercury. He needed an amount of arm twisting. And it was Brian May from Within Queen that ultimately convinced Mercury, you know, you don't want to wake up tomorrow morning, Freddie, and have regret of this. To which Freddie responded, ah, F it. Except he said the whole world, we better do it. So, but what was interesting was there was all sorts of argy-bargy. Nobody wanted to go on first. All right. They just didn't want to be first. And that's when the great status quo, Francis Rossi and the gang, stepped into the breach and got it off to a kick-ass start with Rocking All Over the World. But anyway, I'll return to that as we get closer to the date. And then there's an interesting, funny one in one ways, but it's quite serious in another. This girl went home for the weekend. Her dad apparently keeps bees. He's got hives of bees, lots of them. That's why you get headlines in the papers this morning like buzz off and run for your hives. So her brother says to her, why don't you go out and harvest the bees? It's very straightforward. She was back home for the weekend in Westmeath, apparently, Rachel Glennon. And her brother John says, it's very easy. So she decides anyway, she suits up, she approaches the hives unaware that he's got the phone out and he's filming away like mad. And all of a sudden the bees went mental, turned mega aggressive by all accounts. And you see the video footage of herself and her dad running around the garden, running around the yard, numerous stings later, of course. And apparently they didn't realize that the brother was sharing, that was filming it at the time, but apparently, because I was curious, like, why did that happen? She figures it happened because the bees got spooked by her perfume. So is it a case that beekeepers must never have perfume or deodorant or aftershave or anything like that. They had a good laugh about it afterwards, by all accounts. I tell you, text 0868104106 if you're a beekeeper. But one laugh that they're not having, and that is Hawkeye, the AI technology. Whether it was the Tipperary Kilkenny game, or because the scoreboard was arseways for that, or Hawkeye at the Wimbledon tennis. There was absolute mayhem when the electronic line calling system started to make stupid mistakes with balls that were well long. And I've been seeing that all week, very questionable calls. And there was one of them, which was during the Sonia Kartal, Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova match, where the ball literally was a foot behind the baseline and was called in. So they halted the game, and Pavlyuchenkova, who should have won the game, lost it because of the bad call. Because they replayed it again. She says, they stole the game from me. So it's an example, I suppose, really, of how maybe technology ain't always as accurate as you think. And then a couple of colliery stories to finish off for now. One has to do with whether or not you feel you're getting value for money as tourists. This is more, and there's an interesting one that I want to come back to later on. The Irish Examiner at the weekend had a very good article asking tourists what they thought of Cork. The one big criticism on that, by all accounts, is graffiti. But I don't know whether you're a fan of Vegas and the high prices they charge in Vegas, but the English Times this morning is talking about $26 for a bottle of water from a hotel minibar. I mean, come on, give me a break. Like, if you have room service, apparently, they charge you for the food, right, in some of the hotels in Vegas, but they also charge you an extra $25 for the dinnerware for room service. I mean, what else do they expect you to eat it off if it's not plates and knives and forks? Two coffees and a croissant, $40, apparently. Coffee and a bagel, $33. You think we have it bad? Check out the prices in Vegas.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text away to your heart's content. Text 0868-104-106. Pick up the phone on 0818-104-106. As the Echo puts it this morning, the madness that is the search for All-Ireland hurling final tickets is in full swing after the Cork epic win over Dublin in the semi. Now they're going to face the old rivals in the final in a fortnight. I believe I'm hearing that there's going to be big screens down in Páirceachaoimh for the match, which is going to be an added bonus. That's a fantastic idea. Not everybody's going to be getting able to get their hands on All-Ireland final tickets. So that's a great alternative, isn't it? I did get some texts, and I don't mean to be putting a downer on the events of the weekend, and I'd love to hear from you guys as to how you all got on up there with regards to, you know, the trains up and the trains down, you know, getting in and out of Dublin and what have you. Certainly for those that were going by motor car, they had their problems. Colin Burke, Fine Gael TD, was amongst them, apparently, and can give us a kind of a scene set of Croke Park, if you like, but also issues regarding the toll. Colin, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
It must have been fantastic to be back up in Croke Park for an event like that, however, right?
Absolutely fantastic. And I think, you know, the 75% of those there that were there were Cork supporters. I think it was a fantastic turnout from Cork giving support to the team. And it was also great to see many young families there as well, you know, getting the opportunity of being in Croke Park with their children there. And it was really, really well done. And a big turnout for Cork.
Yeah.
And
What did you make of the goal after goal after goal and the big gap in scores? I mean,
I think the big issue was the skill displayed by all of the players, and you know, it was a real team effort. There, you know, the passing from one to the other, making sure there was once someone had the ball, there was at least two or three other Cork team members available immediately to offload that ball to. And as a result, that's the reason why we were able to get the team were able to get the seven goals.
Yeah, a sea of red and white in the stands. They said that Dublin had about a quarter of Hill 16 and maybe about 20% of all of the seats. That was incredible, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there was no question about it. I mean, Cork, they got tickets from everywhere to get in there. And I think every opportunity that was made available where tickets went up for sale, people use the opportunity to get there. And, you know, I suppose that was then contributed to the reason why there were so many people travelling from Cork there. But a lot of people, in fact, had travelled the day before. I came across a number of people who had travelled up the day before because they had a fairly good idea that there would be huge numbers on the road. So they decided to go up the night before.
So how was Houston?
Houston, well, I went by road. Houston, when we came back there that evening, it was a bit unorganized there. The security people seemed to have had a difficulty, and I think people coming down the train may have... some people who may have had later trains got onto earlier trains, so I think there may have been a problem there, but I wasn't directly involved there, so I don't know what the extent of it was there.
So I'm just curious as to whether everybody managed to get back and managed to get a train, but if someone has if you have a ticket for a later train, can you get on an earlier one?
I'm not sure what the arrangements were, but it appears that some people when we arrived on there had got over the barriers. I think it was some young people, but look, those things happen.
Yeah.
I suppose the excitement of the day, and I think it was, but overall I'd say the trains were organised reasonably well. The big complaint I understand was that there was 9 trains going up, but there was only 7 coming down.
And I remarked on that last week as to whether or not that would cause a problem. You would think if there was 9 going up on the day, there would be 9 coming back on the day.
But they may have had extra charges on the 7 trains that were coming back. I'm not sure.
We've been on Irish Rail about that this morning, because you wouldn't want that again for the final, because that's going to be even more chaotic if it's not handled correctly. But what was the story then with regards to the bar and the shops and everything at Houston?
I'm not clear. I wasn't there. So, I mean, my main issue was in relation to driving to Dublin and the issue in relation to barriers as regards getting caught for an hour and 10 minutes at the barrier in Waterlooville, you know, the Corn barrier. We got caught there for an hour and 10 minutes because there was only one barrier opening. And then the problem was that it was rejecting an awful lot of coins, because you could see when you got to the barrier, there was a whole lot of rejected coins in the place that holds rejected coins. So, and it was extremely slow there. So we got caught there for about an hour and 10 minutes, having left, say, Whitechurch at 11 o'clock. I think we didn't get out of there until after 12:45. It was just a huge backup of traffic, and there was about at least 3 to 4 miles of traffic behind us, and that was at 12:45. So I was on to the toll roads people, and you know, it appears that 2 barriers were open initially, and then they closed down one, so there was only one.
How many barriers do they have?
They have 2 there. This is the exit from if you come in through Cormac and then go down towards Corn, and you're getting onto the Cork Dublin Road just before you go into Primoy. So it wasn't
the main toll, it was one of the access tolls.
No, it wasn't. The main toll was reasonably okay. There was a build up of traffic, but this barrier here was an hour and 10 minutes when there was only one barrier operating, and in fact, if they couldn't operate it properly, then they should have just opened it and let people onto it. It was crazy that people were delayed that long, an hour and 10 minutes. They knew there would be a volume of traffic there. People were coming from all sides to get onto the Cork-Dublin Road. Therefore, all barriers should have been properly managed, and it appears that they weren't.
Yeah. So it was... Was everybody patient enough?
There was, but there were buses and lorries caught in this traffic jam as well. I mean, there was quite a number of buses in this traffic jam that were also caught up in it. So it wasn't just cars. And that was the big problem. So if you were a busload of 50 people trying to, sitting there for an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, it's fairly demanding on everyone that's there.
So is it that the toll machine just couldn't cope with the volume?
Well, the fact is that there was only one barrier opening where there are 2 barriers there. And the second thing is that the barrier, as I said, it was rejecting coins, and this was then causing further delays as well.
So do you think a lot of people may have been late for the match?
I'm not sure. We got in there just as, you know, it took us 5 hours. We just got in as the national anthem was being played. So Wow, that was behind us. So that was tight. And we had left at Whitechurch at 11 in the morning. So we just got up to Dublin at around 4:15, got the Lewis in from where we parked. And we were there for just as the national anthem was being played.
You're right, actually. When something like that happens, they should just raise the barriers and let people go through, you know? It's just not.
Yeah, and
right.
There should have been, one of the staff members that I was speaking to advised that they were told just to man the main plaza, that's where manpower was required, and any of the other side ones were not to be given the priority that they should have been receiving.
Yeah.
Because you had a huge number of people coming across from Whitechurch, Carnivar, all that area would come down normally into Waterless Hill and into Rathcormac and then get on to the Cork Dublin Road before they reached Fermoy.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem was.
Yeah, appreciated the update. Thank you so much, Colin Burke, Fine Gael TD. Stephen, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you, boy?
Did you go in and out of Kent to Houston?
No, we drove up. We left Cork about 10 o'clock. And we got up to, we parked in Saggart, just outside Dublin.
Right.
And we got to Lewis then from Saggart straight into Abbey Street.
Okay.
And walked in from Abbey Street then down to Crow Park.
Great buzz, I'd say, was there?
Oh, savage. Absolutely savage. Like, from the minute you leave in the morning, like, we the two girls in the car, myself and another lad, we're coaches down in St. Vincent, so we have our daughters with us. It was just a hype the whole way, and all the way back, even with all the queues. I was listening there to Colin, like, with the queues and the toll, like, but it is what it is, you know what I mean? The day that's in it, it's to be expected, you know?
Well said. It wasn't as bad as perhaps people are trying to make out.
I mean, like, we were cutting the tolls, and there was beeping, and there was shouting, and there was music playing. It was just, everyone was up for it. Like, you know what I mean?
I suppose people might have got a bit edgy because they didn't want to miss the match or miss the start of the match.
No, and I get that. Like, we made it, like, we got there at 4:30. We were sitting down and all at 4:30, and we left at 10:00.
So you had no time. You had no time to spare then, really. Park in Saggart, get the Lewis, get to Croke Park.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We left then, we probably left Dublin around 9 o'clock. We were home now for 12:30.
Who travelled with you? Did you say it was your daughter?
Yeah, my daughter and her friend and one of the other coaches that coached the Camogie team with me. We carpooled between us, like, four of us. So.
And has your daughter been to the last 10 games, the last 10 home games?
The two of us. Anyway, we've been to Limerick a few times, the Munster final and the one before that when we got hammered. You know, we're invested now at this stage.
You were at the heart attack penalty final, semi-final.
I was. Yeah. You're never going to see these games. Like, you're never going to see a scoreline like that. And all in the semi-final, 7 goals.
Yeah.
My God.
And following...
These are memories.
Following the Limerick match, it's a wonder you didn't have a heart attack.
Oh, man, it was bad. The drive home after the hammering was tough, but then to go back up again and do what we did was,
So where are you going to source your All-Ireland tickets?
Oh, don't even start. I don't know. I haven't a clue. I'll drive to the end of the earth at this point.
Do you know anybody in Super Value?
I don't. I'll do my hardest to get one. And if not, Paddy Queeve is down below as well with the big screens.
The Fan Zone's returning. Isn't that great news?
Yeah, which is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, it is what it is.
What was the buzz like if, like, 80% of those in Croke Park for that were from Cork? It must have been incredible.
It was savage. I tell you, we were up in, I was in the Cusick stand up on row Y. So I was the second last row up the very, very top. I saw everything. Hill 16, I'd say there was a quarter Dublin, three quarter Cork, and the rest of the stand, the rest of Croke Park was at least 80-85% red. It was unbelievable.
And there was the support, you were saying, yeah.
It was just savage. It was unnatural. I've never seen so much support like that for a semi final.
What's this new song that they're all singing, Killer? What's that about?
Oh, the Killer, the Kingfisher, the Killer song. It's coming in.
What's the backstory to it?
I don't know. They just started playing it at in Paddy Queeve at all the home games, and it's now stuck. Like, it's just part of the Rebel song now as well. you know.
Has the parish of Killa taken it?
If you look around, it's all the kids singing it. Yeah. All the young ones and the young fellas. Like,
one of the lads from Kingfisher is from Killa, I think, isn't he?
He's from Killa. He played with Killa as a young fella. Yeah, he played with them. Yeah, so it's brilliant. Like, you know what I mean? It's connected to Cork.
Yeah, they sold out the marquee. So. It's another one of those great stories. Was there never any fear at all, like, even though there was a huge divide in scores? There was never any panic, no?
Not really, no. Like, you have, like, again, we have to get out of the blocks flying, you know what I mean? And that's where we build the momentum from there, you know? So, like, we've seen it against Limerick the last time, not in the Munster final, but the one before that in the Championship. Like, we didn't start well there at all, and Limerick came out tearing. And they hammered us, you know what I mean? So, if Cork start well, we'll finish well. And that's the way they've been going the last couple of games, and it seems to work, you know?
7-26 to 2 goals and 21 points.
Savage.
But
semi-final scoreline, yeah, savage.
Yeah. But would you have any kind of sympathy at all for the Dubs?
Of course you would. You feel for them, you know what I mean?
What?
You
really?
You feel for them. Yeah, you do. Like, that's a hammering. That is tough. That hammering is tough. You know, mentally, I would. Like, that is a tough.
You're a very compassionate person, I have to say.
I know, yeah.
I feel no sympathy whatsoever. You turn up on the day and take
it. Very good, yes.
All right, well, love it. Good luck with the hunt for the final tickets.
I'll do my best.
Cheers,
Stephen. Looking forward
to chatting to you again. Thanks so much. The Rebel Fan Zone returns to Super Value Parky Quay for the hurling finals. If you can't get tickets for Croke Park, you'll be sorted for that one. Cork City Council have said they have, along with Cork GAA, working on plans together now to bring the free of charge Rebels Fan Zone event back to Super Value Porky Cueve for Sunday the 20th of July. And people want somewhere they can gather to cheer on the team and soak up the atmosphere. And the great thing about this, of course, is just hugely family friendly for families and children of all ages. And that, and bear in mind, there will be many, many, I would say tens of thousands of people who won't be able to get a final ticket. So the Rebel Fan Zone is a great alternative. Text 0868-104-106 after the break.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Alrighty, text 0868-104-106 for all business, including our Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves in the Old Mill Confectionery. You will get a big tray load of most delicious cakes from Danny Buckley and the team, specialising in all sorts of wonderful creations. They do birthdays, you know the way it is, anniversaries, celebrations, or just because you love cakes. You can pop in to their shop at the North Point Business Park and get your hands there, or watch out, because they're in loads and loads of different shops of all shapes and sizes across the city and county. So for you today, we have the long jammy donuts, the light and creamy eclairs, we have the chocolate slices, great Cork tradition, the velvety custard slices, the deliciously moist tipsy cake, and of course the king of the castle, the Chester cake, which is making a huge resurgence. Seeing it in supermarkets everywhere now, the Old Mill Confectionery Chester cake. The Donkey Gudge is back, boys and girls. We also have the big velvety chocolatey fudge cake for you to munch on this lunchtime. So you need to text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106, and we'll start those shout outs in about a half an hour's time. The air coach is on board with us as well this week. More on that, with some great prizes to give away right across the week. You can also pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Meanwhile, because Mary's under pressure at work, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
You're saying never mind your song Killa, it should be all about the banks, is it?
All about the banks, my own lovely Neil. I'm very upset now that it wasn't played in Croke Park Saturday, and I tell you something now, I am personally putting my organ to go down and train the team to sing it in the next 2 weeks.
Who did you want to sing it? I mean, did they not sing it from the terraces, no?
No, and I tell you something now, the last day at the Munster final, the Cork players sang a totally different song. It's not Cork, we need the banks. We need the banks for Sunday week.
How would it work, though? Tell me, at what stage would the banks be played and sang?
It's normally played in Croke Park at the end of the game.
It's many years since I was in Croke Park, so okay. So
whatever song for what county at the end of the game.
Yeah.
But it's going to be the banks now 2 weeks in, because we know we're going to win. That's the first thing. I mean, I So many now, Bean, it's gone up to St. Anthony now at this stage, paid in advance and all now, Neil.
Okay, so at the end of a match, forgive me now for not knowing this, I don't know everything, never profess to do so. What usually happens at the end of a big match?
At the end of the big match, all the fanfare goes on. Hopefully we'll have a team invasion now, or a pitch invasion again of red and white this year. They'll probably try to stop us, but we'll get on. The players will be brought up onto the podium.
Right.
And the bank, the presentation is given, but the bank should be playing and all the bloody sparklers going off and all the rest of it. It's 20 flipping years. We don't want anything but the banks and it's Cork hurling.
So you're saying when we win and the team are up with the cup at that stage?
Yeah.
So they need, do you think they know all the words?
They don't. They didn't sing it the last day, did they? They sang that bloody...
Killer.
No, they sang, first of all, off the podium, that's... I don't know what...
After all, by the Frank...
A blue pin, that's it. That's second, na-na-na-na-na. That's all they were singing. They're too young. They're too young. Neil, I can remember standing on the terraces above in Turles in 84. Cork 4... points down with 4 minutes to go in the Munster final centenary year and Cork winning by 4 points at full time, and I sang the banks on my own being abused by Tipperary people and I sang it and I didn't care. We have to have the banks under week.
Okay,
and they should sing it from the terraces of Cork or ahead in the last 10 minutes. They should be singing the banks from the terraces and the stands.
You're really jumping ahead now here. Pat Ryan is saying we shouldn't get complacent about this. Like, we need to keep calm. We have to win it first.
It's ours to lose.
So you
that
want
Cork team are fabulous. I thought the same. No, last year, mind you, I did last year, and I came out of Cork Park in tears. But that's beside the point.
So the team is young. You're saying, right up to I'd say that Patrick Horgan is old enough to know at least a couple of verses.
37, he'd know it.
Yeah.
He'd know it.
Yeah,
Carnegie would know it. There's a few of them would know it, but the young fellas know. I'd say. But see, the terrace is the problem. Go into the terrace and they're all 19, 20. There's a whole generation never saw Cork with Liam McCarthy. That's what's wrong.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with them being young and being excited about hurling.
I was young myself up there. I soldiered in those terraces, I can tell you now.
You served your time on the terraces.
Up there. I served my time there. I was up there. In 1990, when we won the double.
Unbelievable.
And when we won the football final whistle went, we got trapped, crushed against the wall, and they had to take down the bloody gates and everything to leave us onto the pitch.
I forgot all that.
What a day it was, though. I don't forget it, but I'm telling you something now, seriously.
You'll have to go down.
I'll go down, I'll teach you.
You'll have to touch base with the team. Probably the manager, and go down to whenever the next training session is. Hand out the lyrics of the banks and say, this is it. Sing it for them. Get the backing music and say, I'll be back next week and I want you to know all of the lyrics.
I don't need no backing music. I know the banks inside out.
No, I'm saying for them, for the team. You're saying some of them are too young.
They know the melody. They know the melody. For Jesus' sake, they're Cork, aren't they?
No, but there's nothing.
You know, they learn the words.
No, but they learn the words then. You see, there's nothing worse, and I'm guilty of this. I know the first, God forgive me, I know the first few verses of Our On Navian, but then I start to struggle. I should know it all, shouldn't I?
Of course you should.
I know.
You should know it in English and Irish.
Yeah, I know that.
You should know exactly the meaning of it. But you should also... Are you telling me you don't know the banks either, Dean?
No, I'd be kind of 75% good with the banks. I'd need a refresher course. But did you ever see people singing Our On Navian? And you know that they're kind of half-mouthing it and don't really know the words.
So that's a disgrace. They should know that as well. If they had any pride in their country now.
Okay.
They should know Our On Navian. If you have any pride in your county... You should know the banks of my own lovely league.
Okay, so everybody has a fortnight to learn all of the banks, including the players, right?
Yeah, the first verse will do. We won't be greedy. No, the first verse will
do. Right, okay. And have you tickets for the final?
Not at all. Few feelers out now at this stage.
Few feelers out. All right, nice one. All right, Mara, stay in touch.
And Come here.
Yeah.
Neil. Remember, no, if you hear of a ticket, you think of me.
This is insane. I have no tickets.
I never have tickets. Someone with your charm, no, Neil. And someone with your, like, clout in the city.
It's one thing I've never been called is charming.
Well, I called you charming. This was the first time.
Prince Charming. Okay. I guarantee you, you're on my list if I do. Maybe not the top of it, but you're on the list, all right?
Neil. I'm sorry, now I won't hold my breath. You told me a few months ago, now when I was on you, about how handsome Roy Keane is and how he grew into his looks, that you'd get me tickets to the Marquee. That's this week, and I heard nothing from you. So I'm not going to hold my breath now for the second final either. But I do want you to get on about the Banks of My Own Lovely League.
I have two Roy Keane tickets somewhere. I don't know where they are, whether they've given them away or promised them. I'll go and check. I can't make any guarantee.
A long time ago.
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can sort that out when I get off the air. All right.
I prefer not Ireland ticket, but anyway, take Roy.
Oh, that hurts. Thanks, Mary. Text 0868104106 if you have All-Ireland tickets promised to you and you don't want them. And I can shift them for you. But this is the song anyway. This is the one that's stealing the show at the moment.
Of Glenbower to the river to soar from the arms of my mother, bury me with my hurley by the river to soar.
Heard Kenny Connell do that, Kenny Live, we call him, at an 18th birthday party of a niece of my wife's in the Southern Star a few weeks ago, and must have done it 3 or 4 times. It's a new generation of trad lovers out there, of a much younger generation. I think it's inspiring, I really do. What a great outfit. Kingfisher and Killer. Back after 10, text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversations. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. The Neil Prendeville Show with Henley's of Cork. Alan O'Reilly's at Carlow Weather. A busy day for him because everybody wants to talk heat waves. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, how are we doing?
I'm good. Please don't put a downer on the word heatwave, will you?
Well, the heatwave technically is 5 days over 25 degrees.
Oh!
So not everywhere will see that, but Cork could be in for a shout. It is going to be getting better and better, and the south of the country is going to see the warmest of the weather today and tomorrow and Wednesday, and then it'll kind of extend further up the country as we go through Thursday and Friday and into the weekend. Now, it's not going to be wall-to-wall sunshine, Neil, before everybody gets excited and then gives out when the clouds arrive, because it will actually be quite cloudy tomorrow, but the south will probably see the best of it tomorrow as well. So, look, it's a fine summer's week ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Would it be wrong to say that the next 10 days are pleasant at least or better?
Very little rain for the next 10 days at least. Yes, it does look like that. Now, temperatures will fluctuate. It looks like next week we will see that warmer air moving away from us. But, I mean, there's been a huge contrast between south and north in the last few days, and that will continue. So, you know, there was 12 degrees of a difference on, I think it was Saturday, between south and northwest, where it was, you know, 25 and 13 degrees. So, if you've been in Cork and you've been heading north for your holidays, you'll probably might want to stay where you are.
Yeah, I know. Would you be fair to say then the next week to 10 days we won't drop out of the 20s for sure?
Maybe. It's next week, though, we could see it drop back a little bit, but it probably stay in the high teens if it does go below 20. But it does look relatively settled. That Azores High is coming up close to us, but there is some low pressure systems in the Atlantic trying to break through. So you wouldn't say 100% dry and you wouldn't say over 20 degrees, but it's looking very, very good for at least the next 7 days, and generally very little rainfall for 10.
All right, we'll take that. And by Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, certainly like what, 23 to 25 kind of thing?
Yeah, 26, 27, even 28 degrees likely by Friday, I'd say. Now, as the winds will slacken, it's very breezy again today, but the winds will slacken once we get past the windy today. There will be a southerly breeze likely on Friday and the weekend. So if you're heading to the south coast, I mean right on the coast, it might be that little bit cooler, a few degrees back.
Yeah.
But even if you head inland North Cork, you could be looking at 26, 27 degrees easily.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Great to look forward to. Listen, super stuff. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate you dropping by as always. Great weather ahead. Alan O'Reilly with Carla Weather's always got his finger on the pulse. There'll be a big rush now to the likes of Hanley's Garden Centre, who sponsored this show, and many others besides. Everybody getting things out, getting the barbecue sorted out, and the umbrellas and the parasols and the loungers and everything that you need. So do enjoy it. Text 0868104106. Another thing to enjoy today, the Monday Munchies, if you're lucky enough to win, we will be sending a big tray load of cakes. It'll feed at least 15 of you, possibly more. The Monday Munchies, you need to text who you are and where you are to 0868104106. As we say good morning to everybody, all of the staff at Woody's in Blackpool, they'd love to win. Morning to Ken and all of the staff, to the staff of the Post District Sorting Unit in Boher Bui are listening. MCM Technology at Harbour Point Business Park in Little Island. We also have Rockwell, the ventilation and insulation workshop in Claheen, are listening always. The lads in Civil Ryan Engineering. Everybody at Pest Attack based at the Lock. BAM on Horgan's Quay. They're always hungry. Building those apartment blocks. Johnson's Pharmacy in Victoria Cross. The Irish Blood Transfusion Service at St. Finbar's Hospital. They love the Old Mill cakes. And the staff would devour them, and so would the life-saving donors who will be there today if they're lucky enough to win. O'Keefe's Shop in St. Luke's. It's a small, local, family-run shop, and they love cakes. Fairhill Fairfield Summer Scheme starts today. They got over 100 children in attendance. Lisa and her crew of volunteers could certainly do with a nice cake and a cup of tea. And Top Part Motor Factors for the Munchies. Good morning to Roy and all of the team. So keep those shout-outs coming. Keep those texts coming. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Let me just go straight back to the phone lines. Jackie, good morning. Hello.
Hello, how are things?
I'm very good. Are we talking about the National Anthem?
We are talking about the National Anthem, and we're talking about the banks.
Okay, and do you
wholly and absolutely on Mary's page. It has to be the banks first.
We have to win it first. Or do you want them just singing it from the terraces?
No, but they can sing it from the terraces.
All right, good one.
From the terraces.
Good one.
We need to give them those words that I sent you. Emer has it there. She's going to give it to you to print off.
They're on the way. I can't wait to get them into my hand. What are they? Well, I'll say nothing till I get them. All right, here we are.
Well, the card, the painting on the front of the card my husband did a few years ago, and it's of before the Christie Ring Bridge. It's the banks before the Christie Ring Bridge.
It's beautiful.
It was in there.
It's beautiful. It's just like, is that a Christmas card that he designed himself?
It is a Christmas card, yes, it is.
Okay.
He did a series of 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Rock, Shandon Street, Cattle Market.
What's his name?
Banks, Kieran O'Callaghan.
I know that name.
Because I sent you his Christmas card at Christmas of a different version of the Pope's Key.
I just love
a new painting.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
He's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, he's highly talented. I won't run him down there for that.
Okay, so he's great at that, but you can't claim the lyrics of the Banks because they're quite old. But
no, we can't claim the lyrics, no, but they're put in as to complement the painting.
But there's
And each card he did, it was his father Prost that wrote them, but each card he did, he put a pertinent song into it, like the Bells of Shandon is on the one of Shandon, et cetera, the whole way through.
There's a lot of lyrics in the banks.
There's a lot of lyrics, but you have 2 weeks. And if you meet up with Mary there, I'll meet up with you and we'll sing it and we'll teach it to you. This is an offer you can't refuse.
Surely the first verse is good enough, doesn't it?
Come on now. You wouldn't just sing the first verse of the National Anthem even though you say you don't know it.
Well, I did know it once. I knew it all when I was a kid, but over the years
have to have known it if you went to the North Man.
I did know it back then, but I'm a great starter, you know, but then I fall away. That's the problem. I mean, the Banks is long. I mean, you know, Beautiful City, that's got about 50 verses.
And that's another beautiful song.
It is, but thank God they're not asking people to learn off Beautiful City. Would the first verse not just do?
No. And actually, if you go onto Facebook and onto the Delaney Rovers page, On Saturday, going up in the train, they had a guy with a guitar walking up and down the carriage, and they were all singing the Banks.
Why don't you?
And it's brilliant. And I'm not a Delaney Rovers woman, just by the way.
All right, so why don't you photocopy? Why don't you photocopy like 50,000 copies of the lyrics? Get a whole load of volunteers up to Croke Park, and indeed down to Parky Quay for the fan zone, and hand out the lyrics to everybody as they're going in.
That could be done. So you have the lyrics now there, and I'm waiting to hear you sing it.
Okay, all right.
Maybe to my detriment, but I'm waiting.
Well, excuse me. I sang in five pantomimes, I'll have you know. Well able.
I know, I do, with Jim Mulcahy. Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'll take it under advisement on the banks of my own lovely Lee. What is it? There's 1, 2, 3, 4 verses. That's fine. You would say, Sasha, there's nothing wrong with that, but there's 2, 4, 6, 8. There's 10 lines in each verse, which is like over 40 lines of lyrics. Anyway, not even half 10, and I have two women who want to meet me for a sing-song. How bad, huh? Back after the break.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Years ago, I spoke on the air to a man by the name of Gary. He was known as Gary Gatwick. He was a man who was left in Gatwick Airport as a baby. And he was trying to find his mother, who he thought may have been Irish. I remember that call many years ago. And then at the weekend, I watched the Phone Box Babies on TV, on RTE. It was an RTE documentary. It was exploring the story of three siblings and the amazing twists that reunited the three of them. I mean, it's an incredible story of three individuals, as I say. And I'm talking about three people who didn't know that they had brothers or sisters or indeed the full story behind their lives. It was an incredible view. It was Helen Ward, David McBride and John Dowling. Now, David McBride was born in 1962. He was left in a car in a Belfast driveway. John Dowling was born in 1965 and he was found in a Drogheda phone box. And Helen Ward was born in 1968 and was discovered in a Dundalk phone box. They were all adopted by beautiful families and beautiful people and raised in different parts of the country. Decent people. Like David was found by a doctor's wife. I think she went out to bring in the shopping from the car, and there was little David. Helen was found by a lorry driver, Cork lorry driver, Donald Boyle, in a phone box in Dundalk, and they both joined me on air this morning. It's lovely chatting with you, Helen and David. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
I so enjoyed watching it last night. I mean, it was just so emotional. What an incredible story, and what an incredible journey. Helen, pick up on the story and give us a bit of a background that led you to doing DNA tests, logging on to Ancestry, the website, and finding out this wonderful, wonderful news.
Well, the background to my story, I suppose, is when I was a young child and a comment was made to me that I was the adopted child in the family. And I think it was from there that kind of, you know, gave me the drive to find out a little bit more as to who I was. That was kind of the first start of my journey, asking the questions at home and stuff like that. Then I became more curious when I was 18. And I continued being more curious when my own children were born. And I ended up speaking with a social worker in Drogheda when I was about 35. And basically, she had some papers there, a very small file, and it identified that I actually was a foundling.
What does the word foundling mean?
A child that had been abandoned at birth. Now, in my case, when I was found very well dressed, very well cared for. I had been put on a journey because I believe that my mum, it was her, you know, she put me on the right journey for me because she was unable to care for me. Mm-hmm. But when I, you know, got that news, it was very upsetting. It was very disturbing. There was no name of a mother there on my birth cert. And, you know, where do you go from there? All my friends, very supportive of me, kept saying, continue your search, Helen, continue your search. Went on the Joe Duffy show, got to speak with, that was kind of the first doors that opened for me, got to speak with the lorry driver who found me, got to speak with the guards that came on the scene that night, and also I spoke with a nurse that stood as my godmother. From there, my friends continued to say, come on, Helen, we'll have you can do it, you can do it. And one of them gave me the DNA, which opened all the doors. And as I always describe it, as the gift that keeps on giving. And that is where I discovered I had a brother, David.
Thank you for that. David is with us as well. Morning, David. Can you hear me all right?
No. I can hear you.
Oh, there you are. There you are. So 1962, you're the elder of the three. I saw in the documentary last night that they kind of, as the older brother, they look up to you and they take your advice and do what they're told. Is that right?
No, that's very untrue. We do what Helen tells us to do.
Good answer. But your story and your journey, please let us know. 1962.
Well, my journey started where I was found in a car in the 16th of January 1962 at about 9 o'clock at night. A doctor's wife came out to the car and she found me on the front seat. She immediately took me in, called the police. The police came and took me to the hospital in Belfast, and then I was moved to a children's home for about nine to 12 months in Larne in the North Coast. From there, I was fostered out to a family, to a Protestant family in Lisburn, which is about 8 miles from Belfast. I was eventually adopted at about just between 7 and 8 years of age because social services were a bit sceptical about agreeing to the adoption for religious purposes at the time.
Yeah.
Lots of religious problems in Ireland at the time. So my father, who God rest his soul, took it into his own hands to take it to court for me to be adopted, which I eventually was adopted.
Yeah.
So as a child, you don't understand that. But I remember I'd said to my dad that I was going to join up. And he said, OK, well, we need to go in and get your birth certificate because you'll need one. So I ended up going into Belfast.
When you, for those that haven't seen it, when you say join up, are we talking about the military?
Yeah, join up in the military.
Okay.
So I went into Belfast with my father. We went to get a certificate from the registry office and they didn't have a birth certificate. So there was two issues with that. One, the hospital in Belfast, when I was taken there, had not registered me. So I just ended up going north. And the only thing that had been done in relation to me in the first 7 years, other than the social services documentation, was an adoption certificate when I was adopted. So I ended up with an adoption certificate, but no birth certificate.
Yeah, yeah.
So my adoption certificate said on or about the 6th of January, 1962. They estimated that at the time I was found, I was between 14 and 21 days old. That's what they thought. And so I asked my father, and my father explained everything to me, that I'd been found in a car, and that obviously that it was, they didn't know who my mother was, etc. And so that was a wee bit of a shock, because I knew I was adopted because social services would come to the house. I knew it was fostered and whatnot.
Yeah.
Social services would come to the house, but I never knew the background to anything until that day.
Yeah. Yeah, and in your case, and if I remember watching it correctly, in Helen's case, in tartan shopping bags, beautifully dressed, in good health, warm bottles, and your case, as you say, the doctor's wife had gone out to get the shopping that she had left in the car, and literally discovered you in the passenger seat.
Yeah, I mean, the strange thing about the doctor's wife who discovered me, I subsequently met her in 2003.
Yeah.
But her husband headed the gynecology unit at the Queen's University in Belfast. He headed the trust, etc. So he was a gynecologist. So you can read into that what you want,
yeah,
but it was quite a strange place to be found when you actually visit the location, to drive all that way to place me in a car in the front seat of that car. So, so that was a wee bit of a strange thing in itself.
It was, yeah. And of course, the story moves along nicely then with regards to the DNA profiling. Was it you first got the first ping, Helen? Was it?
Say that again. Sorry, say that again.
Were you the first? Because I know there is a third brother, John Dowling, born in 1965, yes. Found in a Drogheda phone box, another phone lock box like your good self in Dundalk. Was it you first got the news that you possibly had a brother or a sister or perhaps even more?
Well, what happened was, on doing my research, I had heard about another case, which was the Drogheda baby in the phone box, and I had said it to David. And, of course, David had a bit of a laugh at me, thinking I was totally off me chops. And it was only then when we were doing the documentary with Long Lost Families, we said it to them, and nothing came of it then. And we suddenly got a call a couple of months later to say that they wanted to do a little bit more filming. And that is where we discovered we had our brother, John.
What was it like when yourself and David first met?
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. It's very hard to really describe it because it was, I suppose, a moment of kind of disbelief that this is happening, a moment of pure excitement and true miracle. And that is the way I'd describe it.
Were you nervous?
I suppose the build-up to walking into the room, I was, of course, shaking and rattling in my boots. But as soon as myself and David embraced, and as soon as we both sat down, it was like as if there was nobody else in the room, and we just sat and we chatted. And it was like as if we were picking up from not having seen each other,
yeah.
Yet we had never known each other.
Yeah.
And I think that was the most unique moment of my life.
You know, it was very poignant, actually, the entire story. But there was one aspect of it, and forgive me for not knowing who said it, but I think it was one contributor said, you know, in those days and for many years afterwards, we had orphanages and mother and baby homes and industrial schools, and we had Magdalene laundries. Pick up on that point, perhaps you, David, that you had beautiful families and beautiful parents and were, you know, really looked after and very much loved. It didn't necessarily mean it could have been that way, right?
Yeah, it didn't necessarily mean it could have been that way. I mean, I did a previous program in 2003, and we spoke with the head of the Catholic Church in the north of Ireland. And the head of the Catholic Church informed myself in the program that in between Christmas and New Year in 61, a lady came in who was very heavily pregnant, accompanied by a gentleman. And they explained to her the requirements for her to have her baby in the child home, etc., and what would be expected of her. And she got up and walked out and left the next day.
Yeah.
Now, whether she was my mother or not,
crikey,
is debatable,
crikey,
or our mother.
Yeah.
But the situation was that women didn't have much of a choice in those days. If they decided that they were going to go into a mother and baby home or a Magdalene laundry, they had to serve penance, and that penance could be 3-4 years, or it could be financial. And in any event, they would still lose their child, and they wouldn't have any control over where their child went. The other situation is that children like us, like myself, Helen and John, and children who were born out of wedlock, like the mothers, were pariahs. They were treated appallingly in Irish culture at the time. The society just didn't accept them and looked down on them. So women had choices as to whether to go into these homes or alternatively give their children an opportunity by placing them, by maybe going to the United Kingdom to place them up for adoption, or, as our mother did, by placing us in cars. But we were all well looked after. And we've got to remember at this time is that our mother and her father would never have came forward simply because they were breaking the law and they would have gone to jail. And secondly, with me being found in the north and Helen and John being found in the south in exactly the same circumstances as far as the tartan bag is concerned, the two police forces, because of what was happening in the country at the time, in Ireland at the time, did not communicate. And they may have been able to put myself together with John and then subsequently myself and John with Helen. But the situation was that our mother had a choice, really, at the end of the day. She had a choice to keep us, but what life could she have given us? Our father was married with 14 kids. Divorce, you couldn't get divorced in those days. So the position was that he or he would have also been a pariah if he'd have left his wife. So she had a choice to either keep us and our lives might have been miserable and tough, or alternatively attempt to give us a better life. And that's what she chose. And luckily and gladly, we had a great life, all three of us.
You have moved the story along nicely to your dad, your birth dad, Billy Watson, in Dublin, and Marcella Summers from Kerry, who was working in Dublin at the time. Helen, would you pick up on that aspect of the story? I mean, and just before that, do you think about how differently it could have been? You know, because I appreciate that you've very much come to terms with being left in a tartan bag. I'm assuming you have in a phone box, have you?
Absolutely. You know, the more we talk about it, the more we have communicated even together recently and over the years, it's almost a form of healing along this journey. When I think about my birth mother, I definitely think she did the right thing. And I always remember the social worker saying to me, Helen, you know, look at the way she has dressed you and prepared you for your journey. And she has left you close to Louth County Hospital.
Yeah.
You know, she has given you the very best start that she can give you. And so I always keep that to my heart. You know, she couldn't look after me, but what she did was right for both myself and for herself. I'm very fortunate, like John and David. We've had very good upbringings, great mom, great dad, and quite protective of me, you know. And then, you know, over time now with the discovery of my siblings, my half-siblings, you know, it's all about communication. It's all about learning about our parents' lives. And that's the journey at the moment.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Opening lines of communication within family. I have a fantastic brother, as you see, William, who came on the show, the documentary, to speak about our dad, which was lovely. And it's from here on in a journey of discovery, really, and hoping that people will, you know, open up the lines of communication so we can learn more about both our mother and our father.
Yes, I did see William in the documentary, and the words that he said on more than one occasion was that he obviously he didn't know, and it would have come as a shock or a surprise that his father, Billy Watson, was leading, unbeknownst to them for many years, a double life.
Yes, and that's very difficult, you know, for a family. Time for them, they need time to process it. And, you know, I think they have really, you know, been very good in opening up to us. I have a great relationship. Actually, we all have a great relationship with William, because William actually lives a few doors down from the baby home I came from in Stamullen, which we laugh about from time to time.
Yeah.
he could see it from his house, you know.
God, amazing.
And fortunately, because I've been living in Dublin, I have got to meet some of my siblings as well, which has been lovely. Unfortunately, some have passed, but they have all been, you know, lovely to meet, really nice to meet.
Okay. And you, of course, big surprise to hear that, you know, Billy Watson, your biological dad, had 14 other children.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's huge.
So the story moves along then with regards to you wanting to know more clearly about both of them, but very much more about Marcella. And that's quite heartbreaking, I have to say, viewing it, to be so near and yet so far, if you get what I'm saying. Talk to us a little bit about that, about your mother.
Well, obviously she was from Lyra Compan in Kerry, in North Kerry, and she was local to that area, and she left there, we understand, when she was about 17 to go to Dublin. And obviously it is very sad that we never found out more about her. We understand that she did work in a shop which our father owned, so we understand that point, and that's probably how they met.
Yeah.
But her life is quite tough, because when she was younger, her mother had just given birth and had an accident where she fell into a fire at home. and subsequently died shortly thereafter. So Marcella was at that point, I think, the oldest daughter in the house. And so she was one of 10 children. And the position would have been that she was probably going to be relied on to bring her younger siblings up with, mm-hmm. with her father. So she had a tough start in life. She had a tough start in life. And obviously she arrives in Dublin and then she meets our father. At what point, we don't know, because we can only take it back to 9 months before I was born, really, at the end of the day. But she did have a tough life, but we found out a wee bit about her during the programme.
Yeah, okay. Did you discover that there's potentially a fourth child? The one story about the child found in the phone box in Newry in 1963, is that part of your search now?
Well, the position is that there was a fourth child found, that there was another child found in 1963 in Newry. We understand from what we've looked into that the circumstances are very similar. But it is quite strange when you do this search about things you find out, because we also find out that there was a young baby girl found at the same time, around that same time in Newry. So when you hear these things and when you look at the location of people being found and the facts of them, then you wonder yourself, well, are we all connected? Are we connected? And we've got a feeling we may be connected, but obviously the individual, the fourth child, we respect their privacy. And if they do think they're connected to us, then we would more than welcome them coming forward.
And Helen, were you able to piece together much of Marcella's long life?
Well, from our first cousin in Birmingham, she was able to give us some information as to where she was living in Dublin and the surrounding areas. And we were able to pick up on, you know, a small amount of her journey in Dublin. You know, every conversation we have, we get a little bit further. And I think, as you see in the documentary, it was great because we did get to meet other people. We got to meet the girl in Woodstock, where our mother lived. Carmel came forward to give us a little snippet of her life. Ken Doherty, who had been very close
Super champion, yeah.
To our mother when he was growing up, and his mum and our mum were best friends. So you get snippets of our mum's life as you go along your journey.
They all called her a character. They say she loved music. One of the most moving aspects of the story was when you three went to visit her retirement home. Was that later in life, back down in Kerry, I believe? Am I right?
Yes. So she.
Yeah,
went
we went to
there.
Visit.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry, David. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Helen.
No. You go ahead.
You go ahead, Helen.
No, David. You're told. You told me you listened to Helen, so go ahead.
Yes, we visited the home. It was very moving, actually, visiting the home. You know, and we learned a bit of information about her visiting the home, about who visited her, etc. And, you know, she had a very, very close friend, Rosie Doherty, who would come all the way from Dublin to visit her, even though she was in her late years. She would come down from Dublin on the train, get a taxi up to the home and visit Marcella. They were very, very close friends. But they did say she was a character, loved her music, etc. And they painted a very beautiful picture of her, actually.
Oh, yeah. Lovely photographs of visitors, of her, interacting with people, playing the accordion. Helen, I have to ask you about her doll. That's a very moving aspect to this. And it's quite a deep aspect of her life, I would think, would you, her doll?
Yeah, I think it indicates that, you know, she has never forgotten us. I think it must be, she must have sat there. Apparently she used to dress the doll every day. Now, she's had the doll a number of years because she would have had it when she was in Dublin, and I believe she cared for that doll really well, dressed her, and had a specific place for the doll. But definitely, I think it was probably the closest thing she could have had to the three of us.
Do you ever think of timing though? You know, Marcella died in 2017. If it had only been some years earlier, you may have been in time to make contact with her.
Well, in 2012, I went out on the Joe Duffy show to try to get some information. Now, she would have been in Dublin at that time, in Ranelagh, in the Ranelagh area. And I had always hoped then that, you know, she might have come forward. But always, I suppose, as David has said, in the back of my mind from a social worker, I was always told that, you know, what they had done was wrong and she could be prosecuted for that. So, you know, I suppose I had to live with the fact that maybe she wouldn't come along. And then in 2017, I just happened to be down in the Kerry area meeting some friends. You know, and I think about that I was so close to where she was. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. And, you know, sometimes you have to accept these things that, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. But what was meant to be was the fact now that I have got a fantastic family.
Yes.
You know, and I wouldn't be without them today. You know, my nieces, my nephews, the extended family, it's incredible.
The laying of the flowers upon the grave, David, sometimes words aren't needed. And you went with, of course, John and Helen, and the three of you stood there and placed the flowers upon her grave. Describe that feeling.
It was very sad. But when you think about it, it was the first time that the three of us were at the grave. So if our mother was probably looking down at us and saying, well, I tried to connect them and now they're together and now she can be at peace. She can be at peace. But there was a strange thing happened the first time I visited the grave with Helen. We come out to do some filming. We were filming outside, so doing a bit of a scene from our first documentary. And next to us landed a robin and just stayed there the whole time when we were doing the talking. So that was bizarre in itself. But it was a very sad day, but it was an uplifting day to spend time, the three of us together, and we didn't need to say any words.
No, and the silence was powerful.
Words,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The silence was just powerful. Wasn't it very much a reflection of the times back then? You know, the fear that she must have had. Do you both wonder how she must have felt leaving you?
Well, the pain must have been excruciating for her over the years. But, you know, she had decisions to make. Whether she made those decisions by herself or with our father or with family, we don't know. But one of the things that doesn't come across, and I think people are missing it, is there seems to be a lot of focus on our mother in this decision to leave us. But at the end of the day, in those days, a lot of women who had children out of wedlock, there seemed to be a huge focus on them and not a focus on the man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody seemed to put the blame on women and not speak about the man.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes we just need to look back and we need to say, well, actually, it takes two to tango. And the position is that the man is, in a lot of the cases, as much responsible for the child, the mother going into the baby and child home, or for the child being left like we were.
Absolutely, absolutely. That needs to be said. It's just lovely chatting with both of you. Helen, Is the search continuing now?
I think the lines of communication will always be open there for people to come forward if they feel that, you know, they could be potentially part of our family.
Okay.
And I think, you know, that's an important thing. We don't know, like, to realise there was two of us initially was huge. To realise then there was three of us got even more bizarre. And then when you hear stories like the fourth baby in Newry and you potentially think that this could be a fourth child, well, you want to keep those lines of communication open should they choose to come forward.
Okay.
There could be other stories we don't know about, and people who have maybe hidden you know, their lives and now feel, okay, it's time to say that I was to a foundling and I'd like to, you know, maybe meet my family or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's important to always keep an open option there.
Okay. Well, listen, it's lovely chatting with you. Helen, I wish you well. You, David,
you.
And your brother John also. If people perhaps would like to get in touch with you, it's possible, family3.info@gmail.com. Lovely chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning. I really do appreciate it, and people would have loved hearing your story.
Yes.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Lovely, lovely people, Helen and David. After 11, I want to chat with Donald Boyle, who was the lorry driver who found Helen in the phone box. He's originally Cork man, lived in Cork, picked up his Cork accent actually during the documentary at the weekend. More on that after 11. Text 0868 104 106. Got more on this.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Text 0868 104 106. Just some text in all morning with regards to the Cork victory and what have you, and the songs being sang. Good morning. Any thoughts on the death of the Banks? That Killer and Young Offender song is not a Cork GAA song. Up the Rebels. Interesting. Somebody else says that's a local parish song, not for the county. And that's the Kingfisher song, Killer. It's a great song. Listen, somebody else says, you're all part of, well, with regards to perhaps Mary, I think they're talking about, that's the old generation. The new generation sing Killer, and people just need to get over it. Hi, Neil. We left Cork at 10 a.m. nice and early. The car broke down at the Kildare turnoff. We needed a tow truck. We got a taxi to Naas, got a rental car. We had to turn back and watched it in the Horse and Jockey instead. Oh my God, the plans really went off the track. I took my kids to the Cork match on Saturday. They had the best time. We went on the train on Friday and met the Cork team. It was like Christmas for the kids. Got photos with loads of them. The team were so nice to all the kids. They were obviously travelling up on the same train. Please, lads, don't mention the homecoming. Remember last year. Well done. Yeah, we can't be getting ahead of ourselves. According to the Examiner, Kilkenny were discussing their options after the mix-up on the final scoreline and waiting on the referee James Owen's report, how the confusion arose. Could Kilkenny push for a match replay? That has to do, of course, with the scoreboard. So lots like that. The team need to learn the national anthem and learn to stand and respect it start to finish. Yeah, it's getting better, but people are still not waiting for the end of the anthem. Someone give you one a Valium. I'm not able for the drama this out of the morning with regards to the Banks versus Killer. The problem is Cork have only been in 4 All-Ireland finals in the last 20 years. All the kids haven't been taught the song anymore. It's after getting lost through the years. And I suppose with the drought of All-Irelands, it got lost even faster. I'll pay for tickets. It's 26 years since I was at a game in Tip. The year was 1999. My granddad was dying, my mom's dad. We never went to a game since. I'd love to take my 12-year-old. Man passed away in March. Love the show. You hear people thinking, listen, I don't have tickets, neither to give away nor to sell. Bizarre, Neil, I think, singing a club song like Killer. I go to all the Cork games and I don't sing it. Killer isn't my club, so why are other club people singing it? Like I wouldn't sing The Goat Broke Loose on Grand Parade again in a club song that's not my club. Up the Rebels, yes, but up Killer, no. Keep them coming. We'll pick it up after 11. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Henleys of Cork. Text 0868 104 106. It's Monday Munchies with the Old Mill Confectionery. You got the big velvety chocolate fudge cake heading your way. The long jam donuts, the light and creamy eclairs, chocolate slices, custard slices, tipsy cake, and of course, the king of the castle, the best of them all, the Chester cake, donkey's gudge, donkey's wedding cake, call it what you will. Morning to everybody at Murray Properties in Mayfield, to all of the gang at where they work in the Cork Clinic, Lisa P, Grace Sharon, Emer Trassa, Patsy, the IT guy, and they'd share it with all of the other sweets as well. Sweet treats in more ways than one. Noel Dorney and everybody at Euro Car Parts in Wilton, the fantastic mechanics and CD auto services in Cove, Broad Lane Family Practice in Blackpool, looking after the patients. I need a pick-me-up for the staff to keep going right across the afternoon. You'll be indoors when many will be outdoors, I suppose. Shandon Dental, good morning to everybody, including Kira Collins. Simotech in Carrigaline, the hard-working crew at the Irish Removals Transport and Storage Packaging Suppliers. Topman Barbers in Ballincollig, to everybody down at Hovion. Thank you. They spell it phonetically for me every week. The quality department at Hovion down in Ringaskiddy. St. Christopher's Ward in Marymount. Up the Rebels. The fantastic staff at St. Patrick's Ward in the Bonds. They love Donkey's Gudge. That's their fave. Carrigtwohill Community Centre working tirelessly 7 days a week. Teenagers set the playground on fire, which was apparently a dreadful thing to do. The text says, the poor lads at Carrigtwohill Community Centre, who work tirelessly 7 days a week, deserve a shout out and cakes, especially after what happened last night. Teenagers set the playground on fire, which was a testament to their loyalty to what is a beautiful, vibrant village and community centre, being the epicentre of the village. I've seen photographs, videos of what went on down there and the damage and the absolute destroying of the playground by fire. Why people behave like that, I have absolutely no idea. To everybody at Toss Bryans and Fromoy, to Rockleck Electrical Services on the Tremor Road. And finally, for now, actually, I hear that, interestingly, I'd love to win, because another one here coming in from the same location, for my dad and his work colleagues. He's retiring at this Friday at Toss Bryans from my 24 years service. So we'll do one more bunch of shout outs between now and midday for the Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and all of the beautiful cakes and treats from the Old Mill Confectionery. So you got about 20 minutes now to text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Before the news, I was talking with Helen Ward and David McBride. They are brothers and sisters, if you like. Brother John Dowling was the third phone box baby, the potentially a fourth. I mean, it's an incredible documentary. If you haven't seen it, you can watch it now on the RTE player. It's called The Phone Box Babies. And what we're talking about, of course, is a couple who gave birth to the three that we know, and possibly a fourth, and then left them, one case in a car, in two other cases in phone boxes. And of course, it's the story of finding their brothers and sisters and what they call, you know, I mean, it's interesting to watch the documentary that at one stage, one of the lads said that he doesn't regard the other 14 half brothers and half sisters. He regards them as being his brothers and sisters. But it's possibly very much a story of our time, you know, back then, of that generation, of what would not have been acceptable then, but thankfully would be acceptable now. Billy Watson and Marcella Summers were in a relationship for many years. Billy Watson was married at the time. He had 14 children himself. And again, watching the show last night, it got me thinking. I think he was a salesman for a cigarette company and traveled. He was a traveling salesman to an extent, if you like. But it got me thinking how, I'm quite sure it was a decent wage, but by God, how things were different back then, that you could provide a house and a roof over the family of 14 children back then. You wouldn't have a hope nor a prayer now of doing anything like that now. But it was very different, of course, I suppose, in many different ways in the 1960s. In some ways, life was simpler, but in other ways, very much a reflection of our times, that one would leave you know, newborn babies in phone boxes or in the car seat of a car. And in many of those occasions, I suppose, well, I know from watching the documentary that there were cold, cold nights. And watching it then, part of that story was Donald Boyle, who was lorry driver at the time. I think he's originally a Cork man. He found Helen Ward in that phone box. And he said in the documentary that he didn't know as to whether or not Helen would have survived the night, because it was a freezing cold night. And I'd say that Donald remembers it like as if it was yesterday. And he joins us this morning. Donald, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
What?
How are you?
I'm good. You did you leave Cork years ago and just hold on to your Cork accent or what?
I did. I went. I'm living out in Macroom now at the moment.
Yeah.
And the city was getting a bit built up, but I moved out then to Macroom, outside Macroom. Kildemar.
Oh, I know it well. Lovely area. So yeah. Years and years ago, your part of this story has to do with being a truck driver at the time and making a return journey from the north, I think. Was it? Pick up on that for me, Donald.
Yeah, that's correct. I was on the Belfast, Cork to Belfast run, and I used to go up there about twice a week. And I was take a load to Belfast and bring a load back.
Yeah. So, but you would have broken that journey in Diggs in Dublin, I suppose, was it?
Oh, that's right. I used to stay with a landlady down in Aston Quay in Dublin.
So, you were running late and were hungry, yeah? So you wanted to get the old mixed grill, but you discovered that you better call the landlady to tell her you'd be late or something, was it?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. The road conditions were atrocious that night now, to black ice on the roads, and I was just barely crawling along the road in the old trucks we had that time. They weren't great. They weren't like the ones we have on the road today.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was feeling hungry, and I stopped in a restaurant there, an Italian restaurant, Aziz, and I had my mixed grill there, and decided there was no mobile phones then.
1968, so no, there was not.
I said I had to find the phone box and ring the landlady to tell her let out the key. So I didn't see any phone box, so I decided to try outside the outskirts of Dundalk, and I came across the phone box, and there was a car parked outside the phone box.
I find that amazing, do you? I find that part of the story amazing.
Oh, yeah. When I arrived, then there was a car parked outside the phone box, so the road was fairly narrow, so I had to park the truck up on the curb and up on the footpath, and wait until the person was finished in the phone box. But
was there one in the car or two in the car, Donal?
There was one in the car. One, the driver stayed in the car, and the other person was in the phone box.
Okay.
But I thought they were making a phone call, but apparently they weren't. So I had to wait until she vacated the
phone box.
The box, yeah. And she didn't. I think she didn't realise I was parked across the road at the time. You know, but when she opened the door and she seen the truck, she crouched down and ran for the car. And they got into the car and they drove away.
So do we think, without any uncertainty, that would have been Marcella? We don't know.
It was definitely. I imagine that was the connection.
Okay.
Because
I know it was the couple. I know it was because that was the baby, as in Helen being left in the phone box. That did happen.
That's
there.
Right.
That was then. Yeah. So you walked up to the phone box then afterwards?
I actually, it was so bad, I was able to slide across the road through the ice.
Crikey.
And I opened the door, and there was this, the famous checked
tartan.
Shopping bag, you know. It was the old-fashioned, very fashionable at the time. Every second person was using them.
Mm.
And I said, first thing I said, she's after leaving the bag behind.
Crikey.
And then the troubles were going on in the north, and I said, it's a bomb.
Really?
You know, so I was suspicious. So I just moved the bag out of the way so they could make a phone call. And I had the phone in my hand, in one hand, and I had the coin to make the phone call in the other hand.
Yeah.
And the bag moved.
Oh, crikey.
You know, just a straight movement in the bag. And I said, oh, that's it. They'll have to drop in a litter of cats or a litter of pups in there, and they'll have to drive them away. So anyway, I said, they can wait a while now and make the phone call. So I made the phone call, and Julie opened the top of the bag, and there was a baby inside in the bag. And biggest shock I ever got.
I'd say so, absolutely. It's the last thing you were expecting. Mother of God.
I opened the bag and Davina was very well looked after. The bottle, she had a bottle by her mouth that was warm.
Yeah.
And lots of clothing underneath her then, you know, which lifted her up to the opening of the bag.
Yes, yes. So what did you do next when you recovered from your shot? You remember it so vividly, in fairness to you, like as if it was yesterday.
I do. And I rang 999 and the ambulance came over and then the guards arrived and I was cuddling the baby. Took the baby out of the bag and I had her cuddled in my arms, kind of in a rocking motion to so she wouldn't stop screaming. And the nurse came in and she kind of took charge of the baby then, and I handed her over to her, and investigated them by the guards. I had to go up to the guards' barracks in Dundalk and make a statement. But that was the end of it. I tried several times because I was on that run, and I tried several times to find out more about the baby that I found.
Had you heard about this happening before? You were reading the newspapers, maybe, because David was found in 1962, as we know, and you know Helen in 1968. Yeah. You know what I mean? Different babies then?
It all developed gradually. It didn't all happen, I didn't get I didn't get any inspiration.
Yeah, you didn't connect the dots. So was that the end of it for you then, for all of those years, just wondering whatever became of her?
I went for a walk near where I'm living, and my phone rang, and it was my brother was on the phone. And he said to me, didn't you find a baby in a plastic bag at the side of the road in Drogheda? I didn't speak too nicely at all. I said, Chunker.
He was being serious, though.
What?
He was being serious.
He was dead serious. And I said, no, I said, I found a baby in a tartan shopping bag in Dundalk.
In a phone box?
Oh, well, he said, in the phone box. And he said, well, there's somebody on the Neil Friend of Roshono and they're looking for any information.
Mm.
So that's why I met Helen.
What was that like? What was that like, that meeting?
I couldn't believe it. It was, you know... I just have to describe, you know, I felt good about it that at least she was alive anyway, you know. So,
because you said in the show, and you described it as so cold that the ice was frozen on the pan, that you think she wouldn't have survived the night.
Not a hope. I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. And you know, these phone boxes, they weren't airtight or anything at the time. You know, they would be trapped in there, and the temperature was bad because it was black ice.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because, nobody at that hour of the night possibly would have used that phone box except for you.
I would imagine, because it was outside the town, and anybody that would have to use the phone would have to walk quite a distance.
I know there was a chance that somebody might have, but there was equally a very good chance that nobody would.
Yeah, at the time of the night and everything there, I'd say everybody was in front of the fires.
Was it a wonderful thing all those years later then to meet Helen?
Oh, it was brilliant. I couldn't believe it. You know, I spoke to Helen and did to a Duffy show.
Yeah.
He arranged it and we had a chat and before I knew it, then Helen was after coming down to see me with her two daughters.
Amazing.
But I have a great memory of that occasion, Neil, and it stuck in my memory. And I was always wondering whatever happened to that.
Oh, we'd always be wondering. Of course you would.
So, anyway, we met, and we're good friends since.
That's lovely.
We meet occasionally, and we keep up the relationship
That's lovely.
Yeah.
And you're long since retired now and enjoying the quieter life. A happier life.
I am indeed. Neil, I'm up here in as I said, near Kilnamartra, and a nice house and 3 acres of land, which is rough for you know, but
Because the land is rough, not the people.
No, not the people.
They're the loveliest of them all. Yeah, well done. Well, it's lovely catching up with the Donal, because it's great to kind of talk to those that were part of putting the jigsaw puzzle together. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
very kind.
You're welcome. You're more than welcome. And you can say hello to Helen and David for me.
Absolutely. Well said. Okay. Thank you, Donal. Mind yourself. God bless. Lovely man. Donal Boyle, the lorry driver, the long-distance lorry driver. It's very funny, actually, because part of it, apparently, the standard food back then for all of the lorry drivers, wherever they went, no matter what time of the day or night it was always the mixed grill. There's few enough mixed grills on menus now, and the world is a worse place without them.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I need you to stand by and be on the ready now, because we've teamed up with Air Coach this week. No parking, no stress, no traffic, no fuss. You just sit back, relax, and travel in comfort. I love it, actually. It's a great way to get to Dublin Airport. I booked an Air Coach ticket last week. Very straightforward, no bother. Something like €22. Where would you be going? It's fantastic. So we've got a great prize this week, courtesy of Air Coach. Return travel with Air Coach, Cork, Dublin, and back. 2-night stay for a family of four at the Samuel Hotel. Family tickets to the Dublin Zoo. When was the last time you were in Dublin Zoo? For me, it was short pants territory. Family ticket to Epic Museum. €500 spending money. It'll be wonderful for a family of four. You'll be having a great time. So, I need you on standby, because I'm going to be ticking. The clock will be ticking. You'll have 20 seconds. You'll be talking on a topic of my choosing. But can I tell you this now, right? It will be all centered on, you have to take the bus to, and the rest of the sentence I'll tell you when you get on the air, right? So, you're taking the bus to A, B, C, D. And I have a list of things that you will need for that journey or for that destination or where you're going or what you need to bring with you. All right, and you get 20 seconds. Is it 20 seconds or 30 seconds to talk? 20, all right, it's much, much tougher then. Okay, so I'll be opening the phone lines of that. So you get me. It's 20 seconds. You're taking the bus to, and I'll give you the actual topic itself then and the destination when I get you on the phone line. So we'll be opening those phone lines for two callers, callers 9 and 10 on 0818 104 106. Give us a blast of the Banks. I agree with the lady caller, the killer song doesn't do it for me. Banks and My Own Lovely Lee all day long. There's plenty room for lots of different songs, lads, whether it's Killer or whether it's After All by the Frankenwalters or whether it's the Banks or whatever you're having yourself. And then, of course, there's all sorts of stuff regarding the scoreboard. There are talks of a replay between Tip and Kilkenny over the wrong score. Similarly, it happened between Clare and Offaly many years ago, and a replay was played. Well, now, Neil, the GAA keep making mistake after mistake, and one of their biggest days of the year, Sunday, it was the scoreboard. Last year, it was a Cork player being pulled down just as he was about to score the equaliser. The ref, the umpires, the linesmen saw nothing. What amazed me is that it was kept reasonably quiet. Normally, you could see it replayed on RTE, but hey, what's the point amongst friends, right? I don't know anything about that, but I remember screaming and roaring, and we were all really devastated and very angry about that incident. It's nice to see Killer represented in the dressing room with all their neighbours represented on the field of play. It does seem to bring a party mood to procedures, not like the boring Banks which is hard, hard work. It may be hard, hard work, but please, let's not call it boring, for God's sake. Another Cork belter that they could add to the repertoire, The Bold Teddy Quill, is another belter of a Cork song. Yeah, and isn't it great to see a resurgence in interest in music and songs like that? And it's the younger generation that are bringing the change. And I'm all for it anyway, that's for sure. Okay, text 0868104106 and we'll pick up on that again between now and quitting time. And of course, the search for All-Ireland hurling final tickets continues and continues. But I mentioned earlier on this morning, in fact, I got some texts on the topic as well, down in Carrigtwohill. It cost €260,000 to build and put together their wonderful, wonderful playground down there. It's now closed. It's destroyed. It was burnt to the ground. It was built in 2020. And of course, it's so annoying and disappointing and awful bad news for all of the families at any time of the year. But with the summer and the long, hot summer, hopefully, and the long hours of daylight, everybody was using it. And they're now really and truly deprived of fun and play during the height of summer. The story was picked up on Cork Bio, where the Gardaí have confirmed that investigations are ongoing. There could well have been people captured on CCTV, whoever they were. But it's just yet again, vandalism off the scale, with no thoughts what they're doing, why they're doing it. And of course, there can be no reason as to why you would do something like this. Councillor Anthony Barry of Fine Gael picks up on the story from me down below in Carrigtwohill this morning. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Listen to me. Can you tell me what the playground was like before it was destroyed? What did it entail? What was it?
Actually, look, there was numerous pieces of equipment there. I'm gone beyond the age profile now, where my kids are well gone beyond.
You wouldn't be using it, I know, but 260 grand's worth of it must have been terrific. Yeah.
Look, I mean, it was a fantastic. We relocated it. A lot of people would know the car park at the back of the community hall. We extended the car park and relocated our playground down to the All Weather Pitch and Millennium Field, that we called it. It was a way safer environment for kids to play down there. And with the benches and everything else out there. Now, just to clarify there, the playground hasn't been destroyed. One piece of equipment is badly destroyed, obviously, is gone. And the area around that. But as you can imagine, Neil, with rubber and the effects of fire and rubber and the hazardous nature of that, there's a bench damage, there's a lot of fencing damage. Whatever way it goes, Neil, the playground will be out of action for a number of weeks. Irrespective of how we try, and no matter how fast we try and get it back in action again.
The flames are ginormous.
Savage. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the nature of the material, the flammable material that was there. We were lucky, very lucky, that the prevailing wind probably was coming from the northwest, in that if it had been the regular southerly, it could have put the entire playground at risk, and possibly our all-weather pitch as well. As you know, there would be a lot of flammable materials in an all-weather pitch, given the rubber-based nature of it, you know?
I don't know. Is there anything salvageable? You're saying there is?
Oh, there is, yeah. I mean, look, as I said, we were lucky. I think most of the equipment that's there is salvageable. I would say there's one piece. It's I don't know, Neil, how familiar you would be, but it's like this little tunnel that goes under this kind of raised area. There would have been a lot of rubber covering on it, and that was destroyed completely. And I think maybe the pictures looked an awful lot worse.
They do, to be honest, Anthony, because I saw the flames and they're like 30, 40 feet high, and then I saw the devastation afterwards, and I said, well, that's completely destroyed. They have to go again. Yeah. But whether it's whether it's totally, it's just not acceptable.
It's completely unacceptable. And, you know, every community has issues, and there's been small little issues there. But this was off the Richter scale completely, what happened yesterday evening.
Was it being used for other purposes of an evening or night or whatever? Do you know what I'm saying?
Not really. But a Sunday evening is probably the quietest time of the week, because families will be having meals at that time, you know. So Sunday is normally a quiet time around most communities, and I think they took advantage of that at the time. There was no one around, but you can rest assured the CCTV footage is quite good, and I would be very confident that the perpetrators will be brought to task.
Okay. Have you seen it?
I have. I was up there yesterday evening with the fire brigade and the guards when they called. Look, my heart goes out to number one. Obviously, the kids that use this, and it's not just County Tool people. They come from all over East Cork to use it. It was such a fine playground and such a safe setting. So my heart goes out to those, particularly at this time of the year when it's at its maximum usage, to the people that actually funded it and the people in the community council that maintain it, look after it. And to the council workers as well that come in once a week and clean it and look after it. You know, this is just gut-wrenching. For I was on to some of the council people this morning and they are gutted by it.
Will you have a fundraiser, do you think?
I would be hopeful that the insurance will cover it.
Good.
But the bottom line, whatever way it goes, we'll get it back in action. But it's the time frame from the damage that's been done, the health and safety aspect, to get that back open again. You're going to lose a few weeks, unquestionably.
I have no idea why people would be so thick and so ignorant that they would think that this is a fun thing to do. We don't know whether they're locals or came in from outside. It's vandalism, though. It is a criminal act. Would you want to see people prosecuted?
Oh, look, I can assure you, from a community council perspective and a wider community perspective, we will follow this down to the very end.
Okay.
I can guarantee you that.
Okay, rightly so. Okay. Thanks for taking the call. Councillor Anthony Barry Fine Gael, as he says, substantial CCTV has been harvested and gathered, and hopefully the perpetrators will be found, and we'll have more on that story when they are. Will you please tell them all stop waffling and giving out about the Cork Hurler supporters and about the tolls? Well, it's all very well for you to go on about the toll, but if you were stuck for over an hour trying to get through the toll, you'd be very annoyed about it, wouldn't you? Anyway, the lads are a credit to the county and an inspiration for the kids. Can I just say, nobody was given out at all about the Hurlers. Why would you give out about such a bunch of young men who played so well and did the county proud? Mary was off the top of the programme talking about the singing the banks. In anticipation of winning the All-Ireland final, she wants all of the lads to learn the lyrics. There's nobody given out about them. Regarding the traffic, 60,000 people plus are travelling up, so shocker, it will be busy. Anyway, Neil, apologies for the rant up. The rebels can't come on air at work. Thank you for that. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. How about teaching players and supporters some respect for our existing national anthem, never mind the banks? Over the tannoy, and I heard this myself, over the tannoy on Saturday and Sunday, people were asked to respect their anthem until the end of the national anthem. This didn't happen, with players walking away before the end and supporters cheering before the end. At one point, the camera panned to the crowd and a crowd of girls were dancing to the anthem. The GAA crowd are the first to have a go at rugby or soccer because players may not be 100% Irish, etc., etc., or we have an alternative anthem for the rugby. But any rugby or soccer games I've seen, full respect is given to the anthem. We've allowed our national sports be crammed into 2 months of the summer. We've lost our sense of national pride. I think it would be great if people would do the start and the middle and the finish. But I suppose for me, it would be a good start for me personally to learn every line of it, which I've forgotten. It was a sea of red on Saturday. The Dubs were good, but Cork were unreal. I've been to every league game, Munster Championship game with my small fella. He's a Dillon's player under nines. I told him he has to get on the Cork team because I'm sick of chasing tickets. We made the decision last night at home, though, that we're not going to try for tickets for the match, but instead we're going down the park to have a fun, full family day and not be stressed for the next 2 weeks. Neil, chasing tickets and being let down and almost upset watching it at home. So for now, we're getting excited and getting ready for Super Value Páirc Cuíve instead. For the fan zone, and a final one, Greg and Toker says, regarding the killer song, I don't see an issue. We've been singing the Fields of Athenry for years at Ireland matches. Killer is part of Cork, and it's a great song. Well, I tell you one thing, it's a damn fine song. It's a super song. And Kingfisher have sold out Live at the Marquee, amongst other things. I have 2 tickets available for the All-Ireland. I'm willing to swap them for a 4-bedroom detached house in Douglas. Text of the day for me, whoever sent that. I have family passes to go to a tourist attraction of your choosing anywhere in the county, because we have those wonderful family passes to give away to all of the wonderful tourist attractions right across the county. For the best calls, best texts and best email. So whomever you are, come back to me, because that to me is a text in a million. It's worth repeating. I have 2 tickets available for the All-Ireland Hurling Final. I'm willing to swap them for a 4-bedroom detached house in Douglas. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I have an update with Magella in a few minutes' time regarding her Love Holidays disaster and everything that went wrong and the place that they were put. That's up next. But I'm opening the phone lines now. 0818 104 106. Big giveaway this week, courtesy of yourselves and Air Coach. Return travel with Air Coach Cork Dublin Return. Two night stay for a family of four at the Samuel Hotel. Family tickets to Dublin Zoo. Family tickets to the Epic Museum. And wait for it, €500 spending money. So we're taking two callers, callers 9 and 10 on 0818 104 106. I will have a list of 15 items I'm bringing on a bus trip, right? If I was getting on the Air Coach and I was going somewhere nice. And you'll have to guess as many things as possible that I will have on the list. You know how it works. You've got 20 seconds to do as many as you can. I'll give you an example. I could be taking the Air Coach to be going to a wedding, say, for instance. And on my list, I'd have a handbag. Who wrote this list? What would I be doing with a handbag? A handbag. A man bag, I suppose. The invite. If you went up to a wedding and you didn't have the invite, would they still let you in? All right, present, a cash in my pocket, I suppose, mobile phone, stuff like that. So that's the idea. So I'll give you the topics when you're on air, 20 seconds to do the best you can. Now, last bunch of shout-outs for the Old Mill Confectionery, the Monday Munchies, your chance to win. Like, this will feed 15 to 20 of you, all of the best of beautiful cakes. And a lot of these cakes have been resurrected again from slumber by Danny Buckley and the team at the Old Mill Confectionery. They're up at the North Mine Business Park. You can buy there or in many, many shops all over the city, suburbs and county. You can follow them on Instagram, see exactly what they do, Old Mill Confectionery, at Old Mill Confectionery. So the fudge cake, the donuts, the creamy eclairs, the chocolate slices, the custard slices, the tipsy cake and the donkey's gudge Chester cake. So we got the last bunch of shout-outs now for the oncology department in the Bon Secours Hospital. All of the amazing team there, they love. And not all of them have sampled donkey's gudge, so it'll be a first time for them on this fabulous day. It's definitely a 99 ice cream day, Neil, isn't it? You're right there. Ray of Sunshine Childcare in Canavie and the July Provision Teachers, they're running summer camps. Wise Girls in Middleton to cheer them up with cakes. Ashgrove Recycling and Mallow are listening. Everybody at Smurfit, Westrock Solutions and Powder Duff Industrial Estate. BMD at Matthews Hill Industrial Estate, they're hungry. Conn Shop in Grona Brauher. JB Masonry, and they're doing a job at the moment in Douglas. Primary Care, HSC Unit 5 in the Business Park out in the South Ring. Northside Tyres in the O'Malley Road. The Ophthalmology Clinic in Ballincollig Primary Care Centre. And the staff of the Sunbeam Veterinary Clinic on the Kinsale Road. And also, just finally, I just want to mention everybody I'm trying to do one or two more before now and midday. I just want to get this story on the air before we quit. Magella, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Okay, now, since we spoke, a lot of water under the bridge. Seamus has been back and forth and back and forth. It's update time, right? It's update time on your holiday that went all wrong. I mean, the state of this apartment was just absolutely shocking. So much so, you bailed out and came home. What's the update?
So, Seamus has worked miracles. Thank you, Neil.
I love it.
So, late on Friday evening, I received an email from Seamus, and he basically said that Love Holidays had contacted him and that they would be in touch with me this week, that they were basically going to refund the cost of the holiday plus all of our out-of-pocket expenses.
Oh, my God.
So, I received an email this morning from a lady called Monica, who is operator of compliances and refunds and so on and so forth for the CEO. And she sent a detailed email basically saying that Seamus had been in contact with her and that they were going to refund us everything. And I just thanked her, and she said they were now looking into giving us a free holiday by way of apology also.
Wait a second. Let me unpack some of this now. Let me just do some of the maths. the holiday was $2,000 or something. You came home early and it cost you another $2,200 because all the flights were completely booked out and you paid top dollar. You paid $500 for a taxi to Valencia Airport. You had to pay $260 for a car rental back to Cork. Am I missing anything?
We did. We had to pay another €200 and something odd euro for fans out there because we had no air conditioning.
we came home and we had to pay GP bills. My daughter had a stint in hospital for dehydration and she had an infection post, like the cat scratches and bites and so on and so forth. And so myself and my husband...
Yeah, go on.
No, I was just saying that myself and my husband, I was even saying to Seamus, we had all our annual leave booked up, so we couldn't take any more time off. And we were just, I suppose, completely deflated. It kind of went on for a good week or two after that, where my daughter was just continuously sick. We had a good few visits to the GP, and she even had a stint in the matter private, just to get some blood tests and stuff. Because
you're bitten by ticks of some kind, and whatever was going on with the cats and the stinking of the cats, God knows. The street cat. So are we talking about $5,500 or more?
We're talking in and around 6,000 or 7,000, Neil. Just between all the ins and outs of it,
And another holiday.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I am well impressed with Love Holidays. I have to say.
Definitely, I have to say. But you know what? I think it was more just because whatever magic Seamus worked, that he was just able to point out that, like, they were falling unbelievably short. You know, that their customer service was lacking.
No, he's a superstar and stuff like this. He really is, time after time. And that's not the first Love Holiday money he's got back. He's very good at this. He really is very good. I'm delighted. I'm delighted for Seamus, and I'm delighted for you and for all your family. That's great news. That's just great news. Yeah.
And thank you for putting it on air, Neil, because as I said, if anything, it creates awareness.
Yeah,
and
sure, isn't that why they say talk to Prendival? We've a great team. I just sit back and let other people work their magic, to be honest with you. I'm really delighted with this result for you. I really am.
Yeah, it's just, you know what? It's because we had booked some leave for August, but we had no plans. We were just going to take a few day trips or something. But this is going to be great now.
Where are you
going
to go and when?
Well, we're going to go away that week of August, but we don't know yet. We're going to look up what they make available to us tonight. But we're after seeing a really nice family resort, and I think it's Benamedina.
We're thinking
there.
Just great. Six, maybe $7,000 before it's all totaled up, and a family holiday thrown in to boot. I have to thank Love Holidays. I have to thank them. They've done the right thing, and then they've gone way beyond what I ever expected. So I'm really very happy for you, Majella. We'll be expecting a postcard from Ben Al Medina.
Absolutely.
Or they say Ben Al Madina. I'm not quite sure which.
There will be a souvenir and definitely a big thank you. We're going to say
all right,
to you.
Girl, enjoy. I'm delighted for you. Well done.
Thank you, Neil.
All right.
Take care.
Majella.
Bye.
That's Majella.
Bye-bye.
Majella Lorden and her family. Well done. Sorted. That's our man, Seamus. Some people call him Magnum, others call him MacGyver. Call him whatever you want. He gets the job done. Well done, Seamus. So if you have a story like that that you'd like to share, you'd like us to get involved in, we're happy to do so. If at all possible, email neil@redfm.ie. Right, back after the break to finish. Hang in there.
Get on to Prendaville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendaville Show on Red FM.
You know the Hozier song, Get Me to the Church. It's all about Get Me to the Match now for the next couple of weeks, isn't it? Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome Claire and Blackrock and Johnny Murphy and Mayfield, representing both sides of the Lee. There's a playoff. Claire, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Johnny, have you the training in?
I don't know yet. We'll see.
Okay. You're first, Claire. All right. And Will to Reg.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. I'm going to give you 20 seconds, 22 to be exact. Your topic is... are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You're on the air, coach. You're heading to a festival. Things that you will bring to the festival, as many as you can within the 20-odd seconds, girl, to win this prize. And your clock starts now.
A tent, a sleeping blanket, a power bank, wipes, tissues, a tent, a water bottle, drink, a welly boots, a change of clothes, a money card, a probably tickets for the festival, a sack.
I got tent, sleeping bag, water, baby wipes, tickets. I'm quite sure that I missed out one or two. I'm just waiting on your number just to be absolutely sure. Did you say a phone charger? No, or a phone bank?
But a power bank.
A power bank. Can't take it, to be fair to everybody. One, two, three, four, five. You got five. Not bad. You've been to a few festivals in your time. You didn't forget the boots. Johnny Murphy!
All right.
All right, good. Five to beat. All right. I think you got the slightly easier of the two. So you're on the air coach and you're heading off to your holidays. You're probably going to Dublin Airport to Terminal 1 to connect on a sun destination. So things you would bring on your holidays. 20 seconds on the clock. 20 seconds on things you would bring on your holidays. And your clock, my friend, starts now.
I bring a suitcase, clothes, my passport, money, card. I'd have to bring the girlfriend. I'd have to bring, I don't know, socks, my jewellery, my phone, my boarding pass, probably a spare camera.
It's not that easy, is it? I kind of lost track after suitcase, boarding passes and credit cards. I didn't have phone here, but I did have headphones.
I probably would have gone.
Oh, no, it was the right thing to say, but girlfriends weren't on my list at all, I'm afraid. So five to beat, and you got four.
That's sure. We go again.
Try again tomorrow. Thank you, Johnny Murphy and Mayfield. Well done to you, Claire. Well done. You got five, all right?
Hard luck, Johnny.
All right. Well, listen, you can always have another go tomorrow. But you're through anyway. We might well be talking again on Friday, all right? You're one step closer.
Fantastic.
Congratulations. Take care.
Thank you.
All the best. Nice one. Okay. This is ourselves in the Owen Mill Confectionery. Fair Hill, Fairfield Summer Scheme starts today. I can't feed the whole lolly. It's not the loaves and fishes. There's 100 children in attendance. But Lisa and her crew of volunteers could do with nice cakes for their cup of tea. Sylvia got in touch. So to everybody at the Fairhill Fairfield Summer Scheme, Monday Munchies on the way to you, courtesy of yourselves in the Old Mill Confectionery. So you enjoy that and you're going to have a great week with the wonderful, wonderful weather. Ciara Evans here from Midday. She'll be giving you a chance to win two tickets to see Olly Murs at Live at the Marquee this Sunday with Get Me to the Gig. So stand by for that. Have yourself a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.